mulching your grass and setting your mowing blade height to 3 inches for a healthier lawn. For more information on how you can help, please visit www.suffolkstormwater.com. This has been a Cornell Marine Moment, brought to you by Suffolk County and Cornell Cooperative Extension Marine Program.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
You know, kids today, I'll tell you, it's 6 o'clock on our dying planet. It's WUSB Stony Brook. It's time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. It's precisely 4 minutes after 6 o'clock, and you are riveted to the radio, hopefully, listening to us on Off the Wall on this historic Tuesday. This is Emmanuel, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, loud and clear.
Well, I don't know about the clear part, but definitely loud.
I read you.
Yeah. All right, well, that makes one of us. Interesting day today. Some history was made, and we're going to talk about that, talk about some other things. What do you think? History is made on a couple of different levels.
Always.
Yeah.
Always. What do I think? I think that... what is that? What are you doing?
Oh, this... okay.
Wait, no, that's a year...
I brought my high school yearbook. Okay, let me explain.
Wait a minute. This isn't about what I think it is.
Well, actually, it might be. Now, you may remember, and this has nothing to do with the history of today, but over the past weeks, months, years, what have you, it seems that almost everybody has a scandal involving something that happened in their high school, college yearbook, specifically dressing in blackface, or in Justin Trudeau's case, brownface, which I had never really heard of before. But it looked pretty black to me, his brownface. But whatever. Point is, you know, from the governor of Virginia to the prime minister of Canada to all kinds of other people, it seems that nobody is safe from this. There's all these instances of racism that took place back in, well, the 70s, the 80s, and apparently all the way up until the early 2000s. And people can't even remember how many times they dressed up in blackface, how many times they were involved in something that was obviously racist today. Maybe to them it wasn't obviously racist back then. So the reason I haven't had time to do this off air, and this is really my only free time of the week, I just figured while we're talking, I'd be leafing through my high school yearbook and seeing if there's any instances of that, you know, in Ward Melville High School here in the local area. I don't remember.
Well, let's be honest. You're not, like, unsure about whether there might be something, right?
Here's the thing. Justin Trudeau can't remember how many times he dressed in blackface. And I'm pretty sure I never did. I would swear on all kinds of holy books. Apparently people are very forgetful about what happened in the past. So what I'd like to do while we're talking, and we're on for an extra half hour tonight, too, by the way, so we have time for this. It's a big yearbook. I'm going to see if there are any instances of outright racist displays. I have not looked at this before. I mean, I've looked at it, obviously, since I graduated high school. And this was back in 1977, if you can believe that. So this might be a wake-up call for me. I don't think I'll find anything I was doing that was objectionable, but I might. I'm going to look at the comments people wrote in my yearbook, see if there's anything unacceptable there. I'm reading them now, actually. Newspaper people are a strange lot, I know. I quit just in time. Keep coming up with new revelations. That's what somebody wrote in my yearbook. And that was a reference to a bunch of things. I was involved in an underground newspaper called Revelations that challenged the existing newspaper, which was called Kaleidoscope. It might still be to this day.
I think it is.
But how do you know what my high school's newspaper is called? How would you know that?
Well, I've actually got a researched and actually it's on.
Actually, a lot of these.
Yeah,
are...
it's on page 3.
Oh my God, you have a whole file there. All right, well, we'll talk about that later. But you know, a lot of these have to do with Revelations is dead, in fact, because it didn't last after we graduated. But through you, in its spirit, will live on. Good luck. It was great being on Revelations with you and the other guys. Some of my best cartoons were produced for it. Thanks for the opportunity and good luck. That was from our cartoonist. Yeah, we had a cartoonist. I forgot how important this was. It's
a nice looking yearbook.
Yeah.
It really is it's a sharp, good quality.
I'm not reading people's names because they might actually still be out there listening, and I sure don't want to embarrass them. Especially if they say something objectionable.
No. Yeah, why would you?
Here's one, though. This person wrote upside down, so you know they're an individual. I've known you longer than almost anyone since sixth grade. We've had great times wandering through museums in sixth and New York City in 12th grades, I guess.
Yeah.
I taught you your first computer stuff. Wow. And you took it from there. I haven't given this person enough credit or blame. We were both crazy taking on any dare, like taking on both of our classes by ourselves in bombardment. I do remember that. What the hell was wrong with us? Remember to remain an individual at all times. And I got to say, this person, he changed the color of the ink throughout this whole thing. The first couple of lines are red, then green, then purple, and finally pink or orangish. Never back down if you think you're right. Oh, never back down if you think you're right. Live long and prosper. Keep in touch. Well, I didn't. I'm sorry for not keeping in touch. I'm not going to. But, oh, wow. But these are nice. These are. I'm not seeing any. Any kind of objectionable things here? No racism. I had some good friends.
Well, keep looking. Definitely.
What happened to them? My goodness, why didn't I keep in touch with them?
You need to just read everything, take it in, fine tooth comb, check the eyes.
Okay,
here's
one a little bit more.
Okay.
A kid who has no razor at home, because if he did, I'm sure he would have used it to keep that mop on your chin in shape. Yes, I experimented with a small beard in 12th grade. I have a revelation, in quotes, for you. You will go on to college, flunk your first year, drop out, and go to Greenwich Village to publish an underground paper. Anyway, good luck to you, creep. That's more,
wow.
More in the spirit of high school. There we go.
Say what you think, you know. Don't hold anything back.
Right, gosh. So, yeah, so now I'm leafing through the pictures, and I see people sitting in classrooms and things like that. Nothing overtly racist or objectionable in any way. I see somebody playing a violin, someone holding books, people sitting. Okay, there's a pumpkin, I think. Strange expressions in the lunchroom. Trash in the lunchroom, people walking down the stairs, people studying in the library, football players on the field. Again, more people walking up and down the stairs. That was a big thing in high school. There's some cheerleaders, people washing cars, people dressed up in all kinds of weird outfits, diapers and things like that. It's some kind of a
costume party. Okay, that's good. That's close.
Yes.
Costume parties. But that's it. That's the key.
Nobody is doing anything offensive. Just kind of silly. Here's the vice principals and the principals and the front of the school and all that. You know, so far it's pretty innocent. There's the cool teacher.
Real fun loving.
The cool teacher that didn't give grades.
Oh.
That turned out to be a narc. And the reason we found this out. Again, I'm not giving any names. I could. But basically, we were starting to publish this underground magazine or newspaper. And he's the one who told the administration what we were up to. And he was supposed to be the cool teacher. And he really wasn't.
Yeah, they rarely are.
They rarely are, right?
Yeah.
Here are some pictures of the library. Oh, the librarians. I knew them all. Five of them. We had five librarians.
In fact, the high school teachers that were like jerks or that, you know, had a reputation, I feel like they were more they were the teachers that were actually pretty cool.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's a little counterintuitive, but like the ones that were real hard, tricky, demanding, all that, they ended up actually having a little bit more personality.
Yes. Yes, that's true. Here's some quotes from the librarian. Success is not important in itself. What is important is to be fulfilled and happy. And someone else, do what you want to do with all your heart and take the consequences. Wow. Faculty advice, change. This is pretty a simple assignment for them. Another one just said think.
Think.
And someone else said beware of the chronosymbolastic infundibulum. I don't know what that means.
What is that?
And someone else said, don't buy the idea that it's a man's world. Hey, not bad for 1977, huh?
How bad? Yeah, that's pretty good. That's hip. That's hip.
Here's a teacher who said, question first the values of your own peer group. Another said, never look backwards. All right,
unless you're pulling out or backing around a corner.
This teacher said, don't show up at my locker area after this year. I don't know exactly what that was in reference to. This other math teacher said, remember that mathematicians don't die. They only reduce to lowest terms. Wow. Okay. So far, a bit nerdy, but this brings back some memories of all these people. Wow, so long ago.
So what did you think about that Lewandowski hearing?
Oh, that was last week. Well, it seems so long ago.
I know.
It was so confrontational and nasty. It just makes you wonder why even bother? Why even bother? It shows the tone of this administration and the lack of cooperation that we have seen throughout
the
years.
From the minority, they would not even allow it to proceed. Like, they're wholly uncooperative throughout.
Uh-huh.
It was pretty astounding how smug he thought he was.
This teacher said, "Don't come back." That was their quote.
That's good.
I guess, but I think he really meant it.
Yeah. No, you don't want to come back to high school unless you're visiting and making a contribution to have your name plastered onto some gymnasium or something.
Well, some of these, I think they might have lifted from other, like, philosophers. Remember that what you get out of life is what you put into it. There was a gym teacher that said that. And I don't think the gym teacher came up with that. I'm sorry. Yeah. I just don't think that.
Hmm.
But yeah. I'm in kind of the
faculty area.
Yeah, it's not really a controversial section. It's just mostly teachers looking nice. And, well, here's a student kissing a teacher. Okay, so that might be objectionable. You see that? He was the super cool teacher. He didn't even, he wasn't even on staff, but yet somehow he ran a program in our school. And this girl just kissed him on the cheek.
Sort of
it was a spontaneous, a blurry picture, so it was obviously spontaneous, and I don't think you can blame him. But he wasn't around the year after, though. So, but that was because of budget cuts or something.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. And now we go into all the students basically posing. And I don't think anyone's going to pose in a controversial outfit, so I'm going to try and just skip over all that. But anyway, getting back to today's news, we said today was historic.
Well, right.
It started in England.
It was really... okay, so yeah, you've got the apology tour up from Canada in regards to this epidemic of blackface outings. But then Boris Johnson, his prorogation, I never feel like I'm pronouncing it right. Prorogation.
Well, I heard them say prorogue, like rogue.
Prorogue.
And it's got the word pro in front of it. So if you can say prorogue.
I want to say pierogi.
My mouth doesn't want to say that, but prorogue. That's what you're supposed to say. So
his prorogation.
The prorogation. I never said that word.
Pro-row your boat.
No. We can't mock these things. This is history. This is serious. For centuries, they'll be talking about this day. This is the day that actually, you know, in England, democracy seems to work. I was bemoaning its extinction a few weeks ago, but this was something that was it was heard by one court and then it was heard by another court. It was kind of like a tie, and the Supreme Court came in for a tiebreaker.
Yeah, it was over the 19th. They rebroadcast it this morning.
They actually. We're reasonable and they're unanimous.
They're not having any of it.
They're not afraid to stand up. Unlike what happens in this country, where you just basically see, no matter how full of merit your case is, if it goes against the status quo, they will find a way to strike you down. And we see it time and time again where, you know, it's obviously logical. We have to do this. Why aren't we doing this? Well, because you failed to meet this criteria, whatever. The nonsense they come up with. But in England, what they did was they stood up and said what the prime minister did was unlawful, which I believe is the same thing as illegal. Someone tell me if I'm wrong on that. And there you go. The Supreme Court, within 2 weeks, standing up to the prime minister and saying, no, you can't do that.
It's amazing.
You talked over my hand slapping. Now I got to slap my hand again. Ow. Really hurts, Kyle. Thank you for that. So they slapped his wrist or hand or whatever. Now Parliament goes back into session tomorrow, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
How awesome is that? That they get to just have this victory and challenge the system and win. That, you know, people are talking about, are you listening to the will of the people? That is listening to the will of the people. That is challenging the powers that be and saying, this is not democratic. You need to be open to debate and critique and shutting down Parliament before Brexit so that people can't debate. That is against what we stand for.
Yeah, they're standing up for the process and the institutions that allow that process. And that is That is a theme. It's striking and interesting, and I think it's. I think what a lot of people have anticipated and been wondering, you know, where are the boundaries to this, to these institutions, and when things seem to go awry, or when we aren't abiding by the processes and accepting actions like that that don't seem to respect the Constitution or respect the will of the people. These are the moments, I think, where that those mechanisms are lauded.
Uh-huh. No, that's definitely true.
Have you found anything yet?
Well, I found another student that wrote to me. I didn't really know you until Bruce, I can say that, I guess, introduced us. And I realized you were in my English class. That's what it took to realize I was in your English class. You're a very nice person, and there are not many people who look quite like you. What is that supposed to mean? What kind of a thing is that to write in someone's yearbook? Wow. I can't believe... Okay, fine. That's an infamy. Thank you for that. That's something I'll... Well, obviously, I didn't remember it till now, but...
You could really say that about a lot of people. I mean, it's a very kind of generic thing
to say. If I looked like other people, I wouldn't look like myself, would I? So I'm glad I don't look like anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very brave statement.
Okay, I'm at the Z's now. So now we get into the controversial bit where clubs. Okay, so let's see if we had a minstrel club or anything controversial like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Student organization. Let's see, Leadership Corps. I never understood what that was all about. There was a bookstore. People sold things in the bookstore.
Graffiti?
Graffiti was our arts magazine. Yes, folks, we had arts, and we had a magazine to celebrate it. So it was. And we did the same thing here at Stony Brook, too. We used to have a magazine called Fortnite, which was great. It was a glossy magazine, and it disappeared. But I'd love to see that again. There's Kaleidoscope, the student. There's Revelations. There's us. Look how badass we look. It's a whole bunch of us too. More than I remember.
Wait, your underground paper got recognized.
Not only did our underground,
I thought it was
newspaper,
unofficial.
No, not only did our underground newspaper get recognized, it got funded because we found out what our rights were. We even got a little booklet that said your rights as a student, thanks to the ACLU, and we were able to confront the administration and say, we're entitled to this. You have to give us paper so that we can print our alternative newspaper. We won, and we did a great job, and we put out something like 6 or 7 issues throughout the course of the year, and it was basically 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper stapled together, but it was still a publication. It greatly inspired me to move on to 2600 and get involved with publications here at the Stony Brook campus. But, you know, I think also it should serve as a reminder to people out there now that, yes, you have these rights. You still have these rights. You can express yourself. You can put out alternative publications, not only in school, but in society. And not enough of us exercise that right.
I was just going to say the last part. I'm so hearing that it's a path less traveled, but it's rewarding and something that is accessible. Mm-hmm. And people, I think, forget that, or they're perhaps not motivated that by putting in a little bit of effort and coordination and some spirit and creativity, you can really create something that's really interesting and moves society and attitudes.
I still have copies of that newspaper somewhere.
Great.
Pep Club, Library Squad, AV Squad.
Okay, okay.
WMHS, our radio station at 820 AM, which was the same frequency that WUSB used to use when it was in carrier current days. So I guess that's just a common frequency for stations that don't leave campus. But yeah, we had a radio station there. I never got involved with that. There's an amateur radio club, a French club, a Spanish club. Okay, people are wearing sombreros and things in the Spanish club, but I don't think that's cultural appropriation. I think that's acceptable. The chess club only had 4 people in it. How exciting was that? Both playing the same 3 people over and over again.
And nobody dress up as black pieces?
Not that I know of, and those pieces are all in the wrong place, too, okay. So I'm not quite sure. Physics club? junior class board of directors. Okay, this goes on. The ski club. Wow, look at that.
Did you know that, speaking of call signs, you just reminded me of call signs. I was looking up usage for who and whom. Did you know there's a WHOM?
WHOM, what do you mean?
Whom?
Are we talking about
a radio station?
No, there used to be, WHOM used to be a station in New York, actually, New York City. It used to be, and this is true, 92.3 was WHOM. Now it's
in New Hampshire.
Something much more popular.
It's in New Hampshire.
But
it's
yeah,
in the 95s.
The call letters probably got transferred after they gave them up.
I looked it up. It's Adult Contemporary. Fun fact.
Wow.
Whom? Anyway, sorry for the non sequitur, but you reminded me of something I wanted to discuss. So you had a radio station.
It played in the cafeteria.
Intercom, right? That's what you said, like Channel 1 system.
Pretty much,
or whatever.
But it inspired me because I remember being in the cafeteria and they were playing a song, and I heard people whistling that same song later on. I realized, hey, you know what? This is a good way to get into people's minds.
Inception.
You play something and it gets in there and they start repeating it. And before you know it, you're running the country.
Well,
hasn't happened yet, but we're well on the way.
A lot of high schools do actually have radio stations.
Yes.
Like even fictional. Like I hate saying this, but Beverly Hills 90210. There was a radio station
was
in their
there?
High school.
I've never seen that show, and apparently you have.
Or no, but maybe it was Melrose. It's one of those. One of those long-lived.
You sure it wasn't Falcon Crest?
I have no
or
idea.
Or Dallas, or something like that.
One of those L.A. Drama shows. I think there was a disc jockey in the high school.
Imagine that. Wow.
From the 90s. Yeah.
They're on the cutting edge.
Yeah. But KNHC, they have that's Nathan Hale High School in Seattle. They have a great radio station.
There's WSHR, which is Sachem High School, 91.9. In fact, here's a little bit of trivia, too. WUSB got its start on WSHR before we actually went on the air at 90.1. They let us use their frequency, and some nights we would be on. This was back the same year, actually, that I graduated, 1977, which is kind of funny.
Mm.
All the pieces were kind of falling together.
Wow.
Girls Leaders Club, Drama Club, Mathletes.
Now, wait. We go back to drama.
Yearbook.
Look very carefully at Drama Club. I just want to be sure before we go past that. You flip the page awful quick. And they would have a right, I think, but I'm not sure. I don't know.
The only drama there was going on in their personal lives. I mean,
they would be the most suspect, you know, if we're going to do a period. No.
No, nothing like that.
Not acceptable. And okay,
so yearbook staff.
That checks out. All right.
Oh, and now we go into music. And I don't think that's going to be very controversial. Wind ensemble, the symphonic band, chorus, mini chorale, orchestra, chamber. Wow, we had a lot of music. We really had a lot of music. Trombone quintet, pep band, Manhattan Transfer.
Long Island's pretty musical.
Yes.
I mean,
here's somebody dressed as a scarecrow. So that's about the most controversial thing I've seen so far.
Okay.
And here's that same teacher that somebody kissed, standing next to another girl.
With another girl.
Yeah, but there, you know, there was nothing going on. It was just, you know, everybody liked him a lot.
Let's just move on.
Yeah.
I don't want to ask any more questions.
No, everything was fine. There's someone left a Fanta can on a table, so this one took a picture of that for some reason.
Yeah, there was always the candid pictures that made it in, and I had a couple pictures in the yearbook that were like that.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, what?
Some faces of teachers pasted on top of students' bodies.
Oh.
I don't know if that's acceptable.
Wow.
I don't see anything really wrong with it. You see our health teacher with the body of a cheerleader. You see this math teacher, his head is above some girl's dress. It's just cut and paste, basically. It's literally cut and paste. There was no desktop publishing back then. Then we have the cafeteria workers, the custodians. Okay, now we move into sports. Everybody was just basically dressed up in their uniforms, lacrosse and track team, gymnastics, softball. Apparently, we won some kind of a championship. Golf. It was a golf team. How about that? How exciting. Boys varsity track, the tennis team. Again, everyone's just dressed in the appropriate garb for those particular sports. Varsity football, soccer, field hockey. Not finding much here, Kyle. Not finding much. I thought I'd get a scandal or something out of my high school yearbook, but there's absolutely nothing inappropriate that I've found as of yet.
Yeah.
girls bowling, girls swim team, girls basketball, JV basketball, junior varsity volleyball. Couldn't be more innocent.
So, going back to, yes, go ahead. You don't ultimately find anything, what would your conclusion be then? Where are you going to end up?
Well, I
mean, where does this leave you in the context of what is going on in this epidemic?
I'm not saying there was not overt racism in my day. There certainly was, and I can think of all kinds of incidents. But as far as deeming it acceptable, I don't think everybody is as eager to do that as we're led to believe sometimes. In some places, it just seems like it's over the top, and this kind of behavior just is common. And
so
I think there are places where it wasn't common and probably wasn't acceptable, though I can't swear that it would be condemned as much as it should have been.
So you're taking issue with it was a different time crowd.
Well, it was a different time. It was a different time, and there are certainly things that,
but that
wouldn't be acceptable today.
But that as an excuse is, in your view, it's not really valid because you can't say that it across the board was acceptable because of the time. Yeah, in places it perhaps was prevalent.
Well, I just found something that's unacceptable.
What?
A list of every single graduating student, along with their home addresses and phone numbers.
Oh, wow.
Wow, you would never do that today.
That's like they just give up on
look
as you
at
go out the door.
Okay, what was my address and phone number? I'm curious.
You put all your grades in there, too.
Wow. Yeah, that was my phone number. Oh, my God. And that's I lived there. Yeah, I remember living there.
How did you just find out about this? This is incredible.
I haven't looked at this book in decades.
So,
in fact, I didn't even know I still had it.
So, okay, pick one. Don't say the name and just give it out.
Pick one what?
I don't know. A couple addresses.
I'm not giving out people's addresses.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't know who it was if I didn't give the name, but still, I'm giving out an address, and that's sacred. You don't do that. Okay, there's a section after the addresses that seems to be sort of just random pictures.
Oh, okay.
So maybe this is where we get into trouble. Ward Melville Ski Club. I see people on a ski trip. I see one of those old buses, the old buses that used to be in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So they took that. They're all dressed up in ski garb. That's by next to a teddy bear. I'm not quite sure what that means. Someone standing on a mountain. There's people dressed up in some kind of outfit. Looks like they're in a play of some sort. Hey, there's that cool teacher playing guitar in a band. That's right. He was in a band, too. That's why everyone loved him so much.
Oh, yeah.
But that's all he's doing there. There's advertisements at the end of this.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Offensive.
It also paid for the yearbook.
Yeah, it probably did. Imagine.
Okay. Oh, wow, look. We used to go to that deli all the time. Jacobson's Deli. I can say it because they're out of business in Setauket. Wow, that was something. All kinds of other places here. Boosters. No, it's just advertising. Radio Shack, look at that. Big ad for Radio Shack, even though it's completely empty. It just says, say it with music.
Wow.
With Radio Shack up there.
They didn't have a budget for the graphic design.
Apparently not. And here are just some more random pictures of people playing sports as a teacher or two. Oops, we forgot stage band jazz. So if you forgot, how are we able to print it? Why couldn't you just move it back to where it's supposed to be?
Because they'd already done the layout for all the other pages and added it in.
They forgot the stage band and the jazz ensemble. So there's that. Coming up to the home stretch here, and I don't really see anything other than kids at their desk and playing sports. I think I see the same picture twice. Okay, so that's offensive. I was hoping to find some kind of a scandal. I still have my Stony Brook yearbook from college. Maybe there's something
again,
there.
Again?
Yeah, and here he is yet again.
What is the deal?
And a memoriam to somebody who died, I think a teacher.
Wait, but that teacher didn't die, and his
no,
face
not
is
that
in the back.
One, the
Why
one,
is it in
the
back like that? What is the...
I have to... He was basically...
a god?
Kind of like that, yeah.
Is that the picture you can pull out and put in your shrine?
The students revered him. Okay, that's it. I'm done.
Okay. So.
For some reason, I have a bill for carpet cleaning at the an envelope at the. Did I pay this? Wow. Okay. Apparently, a bill that I forgot about from 1981. I'll take care of that little bit later. But okay, so my yearbook is clean. Is yours?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe everybody should examine their high school past and see if there are skeletons in the closet. Mm-hmm. I haven't found any, but I'm going to keep looking. I have junior high school yearbooks as well. So if there's something there, I will track it down and I will report on it, because I think we need to identify our past and confront it and not be surprised by it or not try to hide it like Justin Trudeau did. You know, he knew about this. He knew about this. Everybody knows about it. They don't forget. So it's important.
That's right.
All right. So we were talking about England, but you know, things happen today in the United States as well.
Oh, right. Yeah, this country. Sure. There was some funny developments.
The last horse crossed the finish line.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, should I just go right in?
I don't see why not.
I mean, I don't really know. How do you put it? I mean, do you just...
Nancy Pelosi is open to impeachment, finally. That's how you put it.
It's about time.
Yeah, it's about bloody time. So what did it take? It took Trump having this conversation with the leader of Ukraine... Not the Ukraine. It really bothers me when people say that. The Ukraine was a region of the Soviet Union. Ukraine is a country.
Yeah.
It's not hard to remember.
It is.
So basically, what this revolves around is a whistleblower complaint that says that Trump was threatening threatening to withhold aid unless...
he had stopped it.
He had stopped aid, but it was threatening not to resume the aid unless... Joseph Biden's son was investigated by the foreign leader, or words to that effect. The thing is,
said that there was corruption.
The thing is, Congress is entitled to get the details of that complaint, and the Director of National Intelligence is refusing, as everybody in the Trump administration does now. They simply refuse to obey the law. That is the law. The law says they have to do that, and they're just saying, no, here's the middle finger. We're not doing that. Now, that is reason enough to really get upset by this. And apparently that is reason enough to get many, many more Democrats finally on the right side of history saying, yeah, you know what? We should look into impeaching this guy because he doesn't have any respect for the law and he's destroying the office of the president.
Yeah. And that is another acting position. Dan Coats was the previous director of national intelligence, and mm-hmm. he was ousted and let go. And this guy's sort of sitting in on this position and not cooperating with this process. And the aid was held up, and during discussions, it is alleged that the conversation was essentially that Trump had intimated that. They were that our position, the U.S. is concerned about corruption in Ukraine, which is hilarious because the current administration there, I think, is refreshing compared to the past administrations and what they're dealing with. And the fact is that they're an ally and really they do rely on this aid. It's important. It's important to NATO. It's important to the European alliances and so on and so forth. So. Yes, you have something?
Lee Zeldin, our local representative here, who is a Trump clone pretty much. It's embarrassing. He has just tweeted, House Dems are launching an impeachment inquiry today based on a whistleblower complaint they haven't read and made by someone without any firsthand knowledge of what they are complaining about. House Dems aren't even willing to wait to read full unredacted transcript first tomorrow. Okay, Lee, a couple of things here. First of all, yes, Trump has said... he's going to release the transcript of the conversation. Obviously, there's going to be nothing in there worthy of impeachment for him to release it like that. That's not the issue. The issue is we need to hear what the whistleblower is saying as required by law. And yeah, we haven't heard what the whistleblower complaint is because illegally it's being withheld from Congress. That needs to be fixed. That's the impeachable offense. That needs to be remedied. And they are just not seeing it. They're focusing on House Democrats are out of control. They can't accept the results of the election. nonsense like that.
Yeah, what about the self-dealing that is the crux of how this was how this came about, right? In using his position to dig up and secure dirt on a political opponent. I mean, that's sort of kind of missed in the accusation that they don't we don't have enough facts.
So here's what Trump has said just a few minutes ago. Secretary of State Pompeo received wrong. Don't you have an autocorrect? I mean, my phone does that.
I just want to know, is it the transcript going to be the Bill Barr version?
Of course.
They're not
going to release anything if it makes them look bad. They won't release things that do make them look bad. So that's why they're not releasing so many things. And they're picking and choosing what they... I mean, how do you know how many conversations he had with this guy? They're going to release the ones where, you know, he's basically leaving a message and the guy's not even in.
Yeah.
It's going to be, you know, tomorrow, mark my words, Trump will be saying, look, this proves I'm exonerated, no collusion. He's going to be saying all that nonsense while ignoring the things that people have been repeatedly asking for. Like, let's hear what the whistleblower is saying.
Yeah.
We are allowed to do that. And just repeatedly refusing to obey the law, that is why we are coming after you. Anyway, let me read what he says. Secretary of State Pompeo received permission from Ukraine government to release the transcript of the telephone call I had with their president. They don't know either what the big deal is. A total witch hunt scam by the Democrats. So, you know, he's setting himself up to look good here. And I think we're smart enough now to realize when we're being played. And hopefully Nancy Pelosi is as well.
Indeed. Oh, yeah. And she's got a lot of people behind her, I think, and it's to say nothing of the rest of the things that people have felt should warrant such an investigation. And I think even her action and statements today regarding this is really just that, well, we're going to look into it formally. She's resisted this entire thing. And I think really has, I mean, we found her line, you know, and she's going to make sure she has support and take her time with this. But would he have acted in this way had he not felt entitled? And had she not waited in the way that she has, would he acted in this way? So by allowing him to push it this far, he has transgressed in such a way that now has forced, I think, a lot of people to come to terms with really how he is behaving and respecting or not the institution that he's acting in.
The thing is, the Democrats have been weak time and time again, and the reason why we're here now is because of their inaction. You let somebody keep getting away with things, as they have done, he's going to keep doing them, and he's going to keep doing more things that are more egregious. And here we are. And finally, it's waking enough people up, including Nancy Pelosi, to say, yeah, you know what? We have to do something. We can't just wait until 2020 and vote. We have to take action. We all know what's going to happen, even if impeachment does go forward, and there certainly is enough evidence for that to happen. He's going to be impeached in the House of Representatives, and it's going to go to trial in the Senate, and the Republicans will not vote to convict. Unlike in the case of Bill Clinton, where Democrats were also criticizing Clinton, here Republicans will just unanimously stand up and protect the guy that is in their party, no matter what he does. It's sickening. But it's something that will happen and will be on the record, and they will have to answer for that. Instead of Democrats being so afraid of what if, they should do what's right and let the Republicans be the one or the ones that are responsible for the lack of any decisive action. But do what you are sworn to do. Protect the Constitution. Impeach the guy. And then see what happens after that. But you did your job. It took you long enough, but you did your job finally.
Yeah, I mean, they can stand up for him to what end and at, you know, their own peril. But I think the formal investigation and putting forth this act as a reading and an evaluation of the presidency. I think it's good to have made that formalized it in the record and have acted at least at some point and not let it gone without any kind of remark and so on and so forth. So we'll I guess follow up with this and see what actually happens. But I think things will move more quickly and I think the facts at hand are actually you know, they're evidence of as Nancy Pelosi said, bipartisan measures and agreements actually being thwarted for political gain. Something that is really, it's not about, you know, porn stars and this kind of thing that you know, he's trying to lump in with a witch hunt or commenting and characterizing as witch hunt territory. This is a lot more grievous situation, and I don't think there's the patience and the sense of humor anymore. That I definitely agree with. And
well, you know, this is also the week that leaders all over the world were meeting at the United Nations, and that's annoyed Trump too to no end that this is happening now. It's not like Democrats have said let's time this for this particular day, but he thinks his. His spot in the limelight was ruined. Such an important day at the United Nations, so much work and so much success, and the Democrats purposely had to ruin and demean it with more breaking news, witch hunt garbage, so bad for our country. It's weird the words he capitalizes. He capitalizes witch hunt for some reason and country. But, you know, he wasn't really shining all that much. He basically was talking about religious persecution and not addressing climate change at all.
Yeah, they just want to do carbon capture and a bunch of malarkey. I mean, it's garbage.
It is, and it's kind of shocking to see him basically stumble into the climate change discussion for 10 minutes, then get up again and leave. Disgusting. Not taking it seriously. Not even addressing the issue. Oh, no, wait, I'm wrong. He did address the issue a little bit. Greta Thunberg, the courageous girl from Scandinavia,
yes,
who sailed over here,
yeah,
carbon free on the ocean,
yeah.
And you know, she's 16 years old, and she is so articulate, so amazingly able to convey a message. And of course, there are so many other kids who are able to do that as well. I hope it doesn't all fall on her shoulders. But when she does speak, she really commands a room.
Yeah, the framing of the conversation, her characterization of it from her perspective, and just the artfulness of, as you said, the statement she has made, as it's you can tell worthwhile, and you can tell that there is a fair amount of work going into those comments.
Well, and the thing is, if you have not seen her speech yesterday, see her speech. It's very emotional. A lot of people are criticizing her for being so negative, but for God's sake, we're talking about the climate. We're talking about the planet. We're talking about our future as a species not being taken seriously. You damn well better be angry and emotional, and we need more of that, not less. There was a quote. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. To that quote, our president said, "She seems like a very happy young girl, looking forward to a bright and wonderful future. So nice to see." He actually said that. He actually mocked her on Twitter. It is disgusting, disgusting to see things like that. And to realize that she is not being taken at all seriously, and that these are the people that are controlling our future. We need to change that. And I don't care how we do it, but we need to stop sitting on our asses and waiting for somebody to do it for us.
Yeah, or rationalizing stuff away, or letting other people overtalk the facts and the science. And really, I think, take hold of your community instead of being, at the effect of it, being so passive. There's a lot of passivity around this kind of thing because people, they feel overwhelmed or ineffectual, but it's just so not the case. It doesn't take much to counter this stuff with reason and something actually inspiring instead of this cynicism and just the crassness of capital and all of its the waste.
So it's upsetting, but it's also very inspiring to see people like that. We had the strike on Friday with all the young people throughout the world. So amazing to see that. And it can't end. It can't be diminished by any of this. It needs to grow. And we need to be listening, and we need to be inspired to do more things. And let's look at this negativity that we're being shown, that we're witnessing day after day, and use that to strengthen our resolve. And I think that a lot will be accomplished. You're seeing more people speaking out now than ever before. I think we're at a turning point. Today particularly was a turning point in England, in the United States. And hopefully it's the beginning of something, not just some, fake symbolism.
Excuse me. Wait, can you just move? I got to move this. I got to roll this cart. Yes. I got to get it right there. Okay. And then can you plug that in? And then, yeah. Okay. Now if, flip the switch.
Okay.
No, not that one.
That's the only switch there is there.
All right. I'm going to get the screen. Find the switch. It's on the bottom.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I got it. Right. Oh, wait, that's our air supply. No, that's not right.
No. I just plugged it in. Uh-huh. Follow the cord.
Okay, I'm following the cord. Up.
To the top on the cart, and then the projector right there.
Ah. That's right. almost forgot. In fact, we did forget last week. But it's time for our look at film that we have been doing now for quite a while. We're going through every single year of the Academy Awards, and we are up to 1957, I think. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure if it's 1957 or 1958. I think it's 1957, yes. And what that means is we have seen two films. One film that won the Best Picture and one film that won the Foreign Best Picture, because you can't possibly be both. Which one do you want to cover first?
Jeez. Okay. Hold on. I got to think of them. That one and then the other one was another Fellini. Fellini, right?
Okay, yes.
So we're doing international. Yeah.
All right. Well, as you recall, last time we did this for 1956... We focused on La Strada, which was a Fellini film.
We did.
And it was really good. But now we have Knights of Cabiria.
So this is his wife again,
His
right?
wife again in the leading role. She starred in La Strada as well, but much more range in this film.
She's pitiful. It's tragic. She's so... You want her to be less gullible. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about
well,
it?
Well, the first thing you see, is her with her boyfriend on a nice meadow by a river, and they're skipping and dancing and being happy, and then he pushes her in the river and steals her purse and runs away, and she starts to, this is all within the first couple of minutes, she starts to drown in the river, and all these kids that apparently just are hanging around the river dive in and save her. And then her reaction to that is to try and find him and work things out. But of course, he doesn't come back. She has to climb into her own house that she owns because she doesn't have the keys because they were in the purse.
Yeah.
Basically, she's a hooker, a woman of the night, something that can't even be portrayed in American films at the time. So she's hanging out with all these other people on the streets in Rome, and they're giving her advice, and she's getting into scuffles with them, but she's meeting all kinds of unsavory characters. She meets a movie star, and it seems like things are working out, that she's being introduced to all this opulence and grandeur, and the guy seems to be appreciating her for who she really is. She just meets him by random on the street when he's breaking up with his current girlfriend. But of course, you know, after she's at his place, the other girlfriend comes back, and he winds up being re-enamored with him, and she has to hide in the bathroom for the entire night and then be...
Yeah, he locks her in there.
He locks her in there, and then she has to sneak away and somehow walk all the way home. So basically, I guess the theme of the film is that men suck and that they are treating her really, really badly. She goes to some kind of a magic show where some guy puts her under a trance, and she like reveals all this stuff about herself, her childhood, and this one guy is completely enamored with her, and he basically he's different. He's different than everybody else. He really does appreciate who she is. Doesn't care about what she does, and his name is Oscar. He basically hangs out with her, wines and dines her, and eventually asks her to marry him. A miracle, something she never thought would happen, and she is so thrilled. She is so happy. She is so just completely taken with the idea of a new life, of moving out. She sells her house.
She has a dowry too.
Well, I think the dowry comes about because she sold her house.
Right, right.
And she has some money saved.
Like everything. Cash
and she's willing to just give it all to this guy, and you know they're going out to dinner right before they get married, and then they take a long walk onto this other field, which is on a cliff by another river, and I think you can sort of see where it's going. Basically, he suddenly gets this look in his eyes, and she recognizes that look and says, "You're going to kill me, aren't you? You got my money now, and you're going to toss me in the river off the cliff, and that's going to be it." And, you know, she's a bit upset by that. And in fact, that is what he was planning on doing. But he doesn't kill her. He steals all her money. So now she has no money, no house.
Broke.
And she is completely beside herself. And the film ends. I'm sorry for ruining it for anybody, but I don't think people are going to go out and see a 1957 Italian film in the near future.
You know what? If you were happy that we ruined your night.
Yeah. She basically is just walking down the street. And all of a sudden, in true Fellini style, this parade of people from all over the place just start singing and dancing around her. And this one woman says good evening to her. That is enough. That is enough to make her smile. Despite all she has been through, that is enough. That somebody singing and dancing for no particular reason, just joy of life. These people are poor as well, but saying something positive made her smile, and that is how the film ends. And what do you think? I was just blown away by the photography, the cinematic style, the way people interacted with each other, which is completely different than what you'd see in an American film.
Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't a color film, and I've been spoiled a bit, I think, with some of the more recent winners of these various competitions. But it was well photographed, and I would say really it drew you in. It was not it did not feel highly produced. Okay, so these were very vivid scenes, you know. It did felt like you were really on a cliff, and I think a lot of the location photography was very beautiful in that regard. But it didn't stand out like some of the other films we've been watching. And I think Fellini, part of it is I think Fellini has a bit of his own kind of. It's a little bit of documentary, a little bit of like a natural style of capturing scenes that it feels a little bit more natural in how he's telling the story. I don't know. I mean, that much in the way that like the circus film felt like documentary about the circus, even though it was just a story about it.
It's also kind of a documentary about post-war Italy too, because you see these huge barren landscapes,
right,
where there's just all these people milling around. You see buildings being built, and you know, they're
reconstruction,
yeah. A lot of poverty,
yeah.
But also this togetherness, this feeling of family, this feeling like at one point. Actually, I'm in La Strada now. I'm thinking of the
war
other
torn,
film
the war
where she's
stuff.
Standing in the street overnight because her boyfriend is going to be with another woman, and he just leaves her there.
Right, that's
La Strada.
And these
people start feeding her
out
of windows because that's what people do.
Yeah,
and
solidarity.
I guess it's a Fellini thing as far as just having these massive amounts of strangers just kind of interacting with each other. But I like it. I like that feeling of kind of chaos, but caring chaos, I guess, is a way to phrase it. Very very different than American films. So, okay, our American film, though, for 1957, The Bridge on the River Kwai. I'd always heard that title, never seen the film, didn't know what it was about. But it's basically about U.S. prisoners of war in World War II being forced by the Japanese to build a railroad bridge from Thailand, known as Siam at the time, to Myanmar, known as Burma at the time.
Yeah.
In fact, every country that's involved here changed its name because there's a scene that takes place in Sri Lanka, which used to be known as Ceylon. In fact, the whole film was filmed in Ceylon because they couldn't really film in Thailand or Burma at the time, and it wasn't really as good photography wise. So they just basically reconstructed things there. But it takes place in those three countries, and the film begins in a really, really weird way, because you see all these British soldiers kind of marching into a prisoner of war camp, and they're whistling this particular tune. You might be familiar with it, without the drums. Now, we all know this tune, right? All right, sit down, Kyle. Sit down. You don't have to march now. But we've all heard this tune, and basically, okay, so what they're doing is they're all marching in, and they're whistling this tune, and it seems like, you know, they're still in the military, even though they're prisoners of war. And in fact, they are still in the military, because they have Sir Alec Guinness, Obi-Wan Kenobi, leading them, and basically commanding them to cooperate with the Japanese captors. And apparently that was how things worked. That's how they kept order in these camps, the officers of the army kept them in line, and they cooperated to an extent with their captors. To an extent. In this particular film, to a pretty big extent. But can I also just say something about this piece of music? We can just fade that down. It turns out that film, that song, had lyrics that they were going to use at the beginning of the film, but it turned out for an American film to be a little bit too controversial. And I didn't know about this. I didn't know the song had lyrics. It was actually written in the early 20th century, but lyrics were added later on to kind of reflect feelings about Hitler and Germans in general. So I it's hard as hell to find a good recording of this. So I had to go to a Steve Buscemi film to actually get somebody singing the lyrics in an articulate way. Let's take a listen. Okay, I only got the end of that for some reason. all right, hold on. Let me see if I can get the rest of it. I'm not sure how that happened. It's over there. Okay, our CD player is not cooperating. As you can see, it's completely blank there. But basically, you know what? It doesn't have the whole thing.
Yeah, when you get the crowbar? Why don't you...
The lyric is supposed to be Hitler has only got one ball. That's the lyric. I don't know why it didn't actually put that on the CD. Maybe it objected too. But basically, they wanted to have those lyrics being sung by the troops as they marched into the camp. And of course, that was too objectionable for American audiences, so they just had the whistling.
Right, right. And it ended up being, I think, more recognizable, perhaps, because it was just that tune and not... this sort of, I guess, more like bathroom humor of lyrics and so on to go with the tune.
It's called the Colonel Bogey March. It was composed in 1914 and has been used for all kinds of things. But I didn't know anything about it before seeing this film. But anyway, the bridge on the River Kwai is about basically building a train bridge. The commander of the British troops just takes it more and more seriously, and he wants the bridge to be as good as possible. But he kind of forgets the fact that the bridge is being built for the enemy. You know, he basically butts heads with the Japanese commander who's running the camp, who basically relents to all his conditions. But when he finally gets what he wants, he becomes infatuated with building the most perfect bridge possible, forgetting the fact that it's going to be used by Japanese troops to cause all kinds of mayhem and horror. So you have this conflict because you have these soldiers that are coming in from Ceylon, Sri Lanka, who intend to bomb the bridge that they found out about, and they all kind of meet up at the end and have, I guess, kind of a conflict of interest.
Yeah, the at the end, the same sides, as it were, the British Special Forces coming in to take this thing out. When the completion and the dignitaries celebrating the completion arrive on a train, one thing you kind of went you went past quickly was
Sorry.
The I know you're kind of summing it up, but distinction there is that the original design and pathway was 400 meters adjacent, and that was the terrain geological surveying had been inadequate. And of course, the designers and builders of the bridge citing it there were also building what the colonel Alec Guinness determined to be sort of an insufficient design, as well as citing it in an inappropriate place. And also the way they're being managed up until that point was sort of degrading or dehumanizing, and so what his interest was as far as sorting that out with the Japanese leader of the camp was that he would get English engineers to come and reassess this, and so that is what they did, and in doing that had a lot of success on the construction, right? Because they're not building it in a place where it's just going to constantly collapse. Because they did have several incidences leading up to this where the bridge was not stable because it had been sited incorrectly, and right, that was creating problems for completion, thus morale, and the commander of the prisoners was not happy because it wasn't actually getting completed, and so they basically found the problems and wanted to solve it, but wanted control in solving it.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized that by marshaling things and doing it in the English way with whatever power he had there, it would keep the soldiers occupied and keep them working with pride on something that, as he was saying, had been built by the British that would carry, that would live on for many years. Mm-hmm. and that would be the pride of their incarceration there.
And he was right. It did build up morale. The troops were happier, but basically they wound up building this bridge that was really well built and having a bit of a conflict as far as, is this the right thing to do? By the way, you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. In case you're wondering where Finn is, he's currently on a train, and he will be here by around 7:30. It's possible, Kyle, that there are some roller derby people outside.
Why would you say rollerblade?
You know what? I don't know. It just came out that way. But
you probably offended them.
The point is, roller derby people might be at our door.
Well, what do you want me to do?
If they can't get through the door, they will go. They will get through the
door. They'll skate through the door.
So maybe if they're there, you can let them in.
What are they going to do in here?
No, they're not going to go in here. They're going to go into the waiting facility.
I see.
Number three.
To make sure they have access to the green room.
Yeah.
Okay, do you want me to do that?
Could you do that now?
I'll check.
The door is just right over there. And
by the way, my mic sounds a little hot. I don't know what's going on here.
You're fine on my levels.
There might be a squirrel.
Is there
a squirrel in the board or something?
No squirrels here.
Okay, all right.
You're doing that, I found a recording of the Steve Buscemi version of the song that I couldn't play before, so let's hear that. Okay, I don't know what that sound is. Wow. Technology is ganging up on me tonight. Okay, fine. You want to play this game? I'll just turn the volume up over there. Let's try that. Come on, have some balls. Hitler has only got one ball. The other is Dr. Albert Hall. His mother was such a bugger. She cut it off him when he was small. Okay, well, you basically get the idea there. Both of our technical equipment and also the song itself. But that's from the bridge. Well, that's not from the bridge on the River Kwai, but some of the history of that particular song is. I'm not sure what's taking Kyle so long to open the door, which is only a few feet away. But as soon as he gets back, we can continue discussing this this film from 1957. Wow, how did it take you so long to open a door?
I went back around in the station.
The door is right there. I can see it from here.
I was checking to see if anyone else was in the station.
And didn't ask for a security sweep.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
I found some candy in the conference room.
Did you bring any for me?
Yeah, you want a Butterfinger?
Yeah, give me that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you had some feelings about this film, how it was laid out, something about the presentation that you were describing.
Well, it's very simple, very short. I mean, I'm not going to go into crazy detail, but I will just say that it was originally a Technicolor format. That's the type of film.
And CinemaScope.
Right. So CinemaScope would be, I believe, the format, the aspect ratio, so how widescreen it was. And then Technicolor is the film process for the color images. And what we got to view it with or on is a Blu-ray format.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to do a bunch of research on Blu-ray in general because we were wondering, can you do 4K? Will Blu-ray player do 4K? Anyway, the point is we're watching on Blu-ray, so assuming the minimum for Blu-ray, it's going to be HD, so 1920 by 1080 minimum progressive video. And what these prints are is a 35 millimeter, or in this case, CinemaScope. So what you're doing is you're seeing it at least equal or greater quality than what you would in the theater. And I have to say, whatever print they took this from, it is gorgeous. And if they mastered or cleaned it up at all, I wouldn't be able to tell you. It is just spotless throughout the night photography, just the color. Even in dark nighttime stuff, you can still tell that they were using filters and doing stuff like that. I could go on and on about just how beautiful and enthralling.
It's 1957, but it looks like it could have been released yesterday. That's how good it is.
The opening titles, when I was seeing the text and stuff, I was thinking of Quentin Tarantino. A lot of what he's doing with old film stock and the sort of retro film look, like in the recent spaghetti western kind of homages he's done. It is exactly the same format, exactly the same kind of color, even the title and text. It's just gorgeous, and you really feel, I think, and this kind of goes to what I was saying with black and white, you really feel where in some of the older films, like the black and white stuff, as you're kind of merging into the from the talkies, especially the silent films, but even the films with audio and dialogue and so on, dubbed or otherwise, they're a little bit harder to get into, and you have to pay special attention and focus, really focus intently on the characters, on the story, on the dialogue, on what they're talking about. And my point with all of this is, essentially, you have this moment when you're watching these things, and if you're concentrating pretty hard, you have a moment where you kind of forget you're watching the film, or you forget about the shots, that what it took production-wise. There may be some folly, some moments where there's a clear gaffe or a shot that's not quite right, and you have the sense that you're still a critic. But when you have there's this moment that you click and you are really thrust into the story, you forget you're watching it, you feel like you're a fly on the wall. And what I would argue is that as the techniques emerge and become polished, and the vividness of the color and the formats, as I said, now we have the advantage of basically looking at something that is a copy, but it's like somebody presenting it up close to you, right? Instead of, maybe at the time somebody seeing this in a theater would be, sitting a couple rows back. They wouldn't have the ability to control the environment the way we do with our big HD, our big screens,
right,
and all the tools we have now with these disc formats and the ability to be, in the comfort of your home, to be a real, do a real study of it. And what I found is it happens sooner. And even if you're concentrating on it and really trying to get engrossed in the watching of it and the story itself, it can be a lot of work. Like with some of the international films, are the ones that, you know, they feel like they're a bit crude. I know crude's not the right word, but they're still coming along
rough
as far
around
as that.
The edges.
Yeah. They're storytelling technique. But this really for me clicked as something that it did not take me very long to get very really wrapped up in the story and engaged in it.
And it's 2 hours and 40 minutes. We were on the edge of our seats the whole time.
I was not looking at the clock. I was not trying to actively get into the story. I had a very clear idea of the characters at play and I think that's a real testament to the production quality and sort of the age of film really becoming magical and something that can just take you anywhere. And I think this is a great example of that for a lot of what this then influenced. I think some of the things we've read about it is it influenced some of the James, the 007 series and some of that.
There was a part of that, especially the part that was supposed to be in Ceylon, mm-hmm. Where the American character was being convinced to go back to Siam, where the bridge was being built to help bomb it.
Yeah.
He kind of had this James Bond quality to him because he was basically hanging out with this nurse and being all romantic. A scene that they added to make it more palatable to American audiences because it was basically all male and a lot of soldiers and no real romance. So they felt they needed that. Didn't really hurt the film, but I don't think it was necessary. But yeah, you had that. You had that particular element to it. The point is, and what you've been saying, Kyle, is that if you do something, if you produce something and you do it well, it will be timeless. And this film is timeless.
Yeah.
The Bridge on the River Kwai just simply holds up over the many decades since it came out. It looks beautiful. And but the thing is, though, you have to treat it with that kind of respect. There was an incident. Well, I don't know if incident is the right word, but in 1966, the TV network ABC broadcast this film. The first time it was ever put on commercial TV, they preempted their whole evening schedule so that the movie could be aired in one night. Usually something of that length, they were split over two nights. Bold move, longest single network telecast of a movie up until that point. It was 3 hours and 10 minutes with commercials, only one sponsor, the Ford Motor Company. But what they did was they used what's known as pan and scan. And what that means is the viewers saw maybe just a little bit more than half of the original CinemaScope widescreen image. So either the sides were cut off or the composition was severely mutilated, and they referred to this as a cruel blow to its director and cinematographers. They did not treat it with the respect it deserved, so obviously it did not look nearly as good as it could have. So when you restore something, as they did with the Blu-ray, wow, it really shows. And when you see it the way it was intended to be seen, you are truly seeing a work of art.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be too technical about it, but basically what you get is a letterbox video, which would have been the same thing that you would see on an SD television, mm-hmm. watching a DVD, which very often were in a widescreen aspect ratio. So what you would do is get like a black bar along the bottom of the screen. So now with a Blu-ray, looking at this very widescreen, you do the same thing, except what you're watching is a widescreen version of something that was the CinemaScope aspect ratio. So it's not even a traditional aspect ratio for HD. You're getting black bars on it, but because there's so much information on the newer widescreen players and disc formats as this is, you feel very close to it again, because it's not like in the theater back in 1960 or 1957 where, you know, you might be in the back row or somebody's in front of you. You know, you can be right there and see just this incredible quality. And again, you're not cutting off edges. As you said, panning and scanning is very often what has to be done to keep it on on like a square
to
aspect.
To see it on a 1966 TV set, it's there was no real alternative.
No. I mean, think about that. That would be 640 by 480. So that would all be a stripped down version of the print in the cinema. But this is an HD print of what was actually projected. And that's all I'm trying to say is that even though it's got letterbox and stuff like that, it's essentially what was on the screen in the theater. But here we get to study it in the comfort of our own home cinema.
But this is basically the second film in a row that I think really astounded us with the way it looked. The previous year was 1956, Around the World in 80 Days.
Yeah.
Todd
A.O.
If you have not seen that film, see it from the beginning. In fact, watch the beginning of that film on a good set in a good scenario, I guess. And you will see how it was presented to the audiences. Basically, they started out with just a square screen, and in fact, it kind of fooled me because I thought we had the wrong film in the player. They were showing this this documentary about rockets and things like that, and it was just this basic square screen thing. And then as the film actually began, it just suddenly got wider and more spectacular. And that is how it was presented to audiences. Imagine sitting in a theater and seeing what you think is just a normal film. And then all of a sudden, the curtains start opening and the film gets bigger and bigger. Yeah. They must have freaked out. It's just such an amazing thing to try and imagine. You can't possibly re-experience that, but it was very inspirational.
And they're developing the projection technologies. I mean, they didn't have as mature, I guess, a market where projection standards and so on and so forth were very well defined and hashed out. But this is sort of the emergence and experimentation era where you're getting color, you're getting all these different methods, and people keep pushing the boundaries. How much more sound, how much more color, how much, in this case, how much wider can we go? What will it take technologically? What can we do to produce something that will be distinct, something that will give us a little bit of an edge on other producers of the era? So that ability to try different things is incredibly exciting, and there were no rules for these things and per se, you could come up with your own format and produce a film specifically to exercise that innovation, and in a lot of ways, these things ended up being incredibly successful, like Around the World in 80 Days.
And by the way, seeing Around the World in 80 Days inspired us to see the Michael Palin series Around the World in 80 Days, where he tries to replicate Phileas Fogg's journey around the world. And that's just it's a great, I think, 7-part series where you just see all these different parts of the world in 1988. So these films can easily get you to do other things and take up a whole lot of time.
Okay, that's starting to smoke. It's getting
all right. I think we've done.
I don't think that's steam.
Right. Let's just turn the thing off.
Yeah.
No. You don't need to do that again. Okay.
Okay, I think it's out. It's out.
Good.
Yeah.
Jeez. Let's go on. Yeah, now it's off. All right. Well, I'm not sure. Is Finn in the studio? Have you seen him? Nobody. Is anybody in the studio?
There are no derbyers. I'll go out once again.
The idea was to let them in once, not multiple times. So if they're not there, they're not there.
Yeah.
We can take phone calls if there are listeners out there still.
Yeah, I'm. Is it
631-632-9872? We're waiting to hear from Finn to find out where he is. I understand there was some issues with transit, as is the case normally.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought the paragliding season was over, or was that was the other week? That wasn't this week. He's on.
No, that's the season's over for that.
Okay. Well, the Hyperloop is not so hyper.
Well, we have a listener calling in. If you want to take that call, we can do that.
All right. Yeah. What does this caller have to say, and where are they calling from?
Oh, I'm calling from Brentwood. I called you and gave you a heads up. They had some kind of telephone display a few shows back.
Oh, you're right. I remember that. I remember the call. I forgot to go to the display though.
Yeah, I don't think we made it out.
I'm pretty sure we didn't.
That. area, they're doing a Ward Melville tribute. Not today, for a period.
That's the guy my high school was named after.
That's what you said last time, Emmanuel.
Do you think it's the same Ward Melville? I mean, could there be two of them?
Huh.
I don't know the difference. I'm hearing it on your radio station, on our radio station,
right.
USB.
That's right.
I'm just kicking it back to you and letting you know so you guys can maybe get a peek at it and to let others know.
All right. Well, we will let the... Wait.
International... Hope and off the hook and off the wall community.
Thank you very much. Can you give the details one more time, though?
I don't have details.
Oh, okay.
Then talk to the program director. I can't think of a name. So,
all right.
I don't know.
We will look into this and try to get back to people. But
for Ward Melville event, I don't know. Okay, guys.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. And again, our phone number 631-632-9872-631-632 WUSB. And that is the sound of Finn. He's off the train in 7 minutes, he says. So that means, okay, that would be 7:32. And he runs a good...
how many yards is that? It's probably 300.
He came in third in the marathon last year.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. He might have lost
but
his team since then.
Is he going to sprint? Or
he'll probably be here in about 10 minutes. So we're probably on until a quarter of
he
eight.
Might, yeah, he might take a campus bike. I think what he'll do is hijack.
No, he'll knock somebody off
commandeer,
a bike and
yeah.
Commandeer. Yeah, yep. That's what he does. That's his style.
No, he says official USB business.
He doesn't participate in programs.
Pedals off.
No.
Yeah.
So that means that Finn will be on in a bit. That means he's close. He's getting closer. He's on the LIRR, though. God help him. But it also is an opportunity for you to give a call in and voice your opinions and thoughts and enlighten us as to things going on in your world.
And prayers.
631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. And that phone number works worldwide.
Yeah. And on campus.
And on campus.
You just pick up a phone, you dial 2-9872.
Are you sure that's what you dial?
Yeah.
All right.
You want me to go on campus and dial
no,
it?
No, no, because then you'd be talking to me on the phone. That wouldn't make much sense.
Well,
okay, so I did something this week that I thought was kind of interesting. I played with numbers. I like playing with numbers sometimes.
Oh, this.
Yeah, this. I tried to explain it once. It didn't work.
So
maybe I can explain it better this time.
Oh, yeah.
It basically, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to prove a point here as far as how our system is kind of broken and how the Electoral College really doesn't serve us. Now, basically, we wind up with a bunch of hypotheticals here. But, you know, first, let's take a listener call first, and we'll see if we have time to even get into this. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing? This is John from Stony Brook.
Hey, John from Stony Brook. How are you?
I'm good. So, you know, I care a lot about people, and I'm going to tell you something really important regarding to being healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Okay.
So, I study health a lot because, call me crazy, but I want to be healthy.
Okay.
And it's been recently found out that a study on cadavers has shown that the average human being cures themselves of cancer 6 times during their life.
How in the world do you find something like that out?
Look it up. It's on the internet.
Okay.
But hear me out. Hear me out.
Well, All right. Where are you going with this?
Yes.
Well, here's where I'm going with this. So, God forbid, if you were one of those obedient people that always sat in front of the class and listened to your teacher, God forbid, should you be going in for a normal checkup and they say, hey, you've got cancer, they will kill you with chemo and radiation. And then it'll go down that you died of cancer.
Okay.
Yes.
So are you saying that we should just basically not listen to them at all and things will work out?
That's one option. What I'm basically saying is everybody should take control of their own destiny, their own health, what they eat, and look into things.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely agree.
I agree with that.
I agree with the premise that, yeah, we should take control and eat healthy and things like that. But, you know, you can't dismiss the entire medical profession and say that they don't know what they're talking about. There are people who definitely need help. Right?
I see what the caller's saying because, you know, how many times have you had an issue, something was bugging you, brought it up with a doctor, And they just want to throw a bunch of prescriptions at
you. Oh, of course. Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah.
And there are other ways, you know, maybe physical therapy, maybe whatever it is, you know, maybe there are other courses of treatment or combinations that would leave you just as functional and just as happy. I'm not saying
but
you should
are.
Take cancer or stage four cancer and apply the same rules, but you also should get a second opinion and not just take everything. No, I see your point, and that to me is valid. And it's curious, how are we curing ourselves? I would not be surprised if there's some merit to how maladies can influence us, just like cravings. You know, if you're not feeling well, you'll gravitate towards activities and, you know, not hang around toxic places, that kind of thing. So I think there are some instincts that you can't totally discount, but it is also good to take advantage of what medical science has to offer, at least as far as getting an opinion.
Yeah, they saved my life. I'm not going to deny it.
All right, well,
but the problem is, yeah, a lot of times the treatment is not something that's needed. You should make medicine. You should make food your medicine. That's what you should do.
Well, you know, I think you should just know what's going on, ask a lot of questions, you know, never accept somebody's judgment of you just because they claim to know more. Go with your instincts. I agree with that, but I also think that science needs to be taken very seriously, and you need to look at the facts, respect the opinions of the expert, but always ask a lot of questions.
You know, there are some people, yeah, absolutely. There are some people out there who think that there's an agenda to depopulate the planet. And then you hear them talk about it, and then you find out that it's actually written in granite stone. There's a place in Georgia called the Georgia Guidestones, and nobody knows about it.
Okay.
And they're these tremendous granite stone blocks that have the laws and the rules of the future world. And at the very top, it says maintain the human population under, and the number they give you clearly shows they want to depopulate the planet.
Okay, I got Google Maps open. Can you direct me to those granite stones, please?
Exactly.
It's called the Georgia Guidestones. Google the Georgia Guidestones and take a good look.
All right.
What do you see?
I'm gonna take a good look. But thank you for enlightening us on that. We do have more calls coming in, but keep listening.
Yeah, thanks for your call.
All right, thank you.
All right, 631-632-WUSB. And just as I said that, the calls coming in dropped off. Okay, call back if you timed out. Please call back 631-632-WUSB. While I look for Georgia Guidestones here.
If you're interested in depopulating, or maybe that's a little project that you're working on, please share. We'd love to know more about it. And so I'm not so wait a minute. So he's saying, guys, so there's a plan to depopulate, so we need
guide
less
stones. Looks like,
so
looks
he's
like Stonehenge. Look,
he's
at this.
For population. He's against the idea that we should control population.
It's a monument, but it looks like Stonehenge.
Okay.
Cool place to visit, odd location, and a bit out of the way. The monuments are getting reviews. Absolutely love this place. It's in plain sight, no admission, and very clean. But why would you have admission to a bunch of rocks? I mean, come on. The owners are some of the nicest people you will ever meet.
Mm-hmm.
And this person says this monument, in quotes, is to the New World Order, is literally in the middle of nowhere. That is the best place for this creepy set of stones and its eerie message. It gives guidance in multiple languages for man's continued existence on this planet by following 10 guidelines, hence the Georgia Guidestones. No one knows who paid to have these stones installed, and it's quite the local mystery. So,
like
Finn, how did you get here so fast?
Speaking of local mysteries.
Wow. Okay. Well, Finn, somehow, you said you were 7 minutes away on the train.
Yeah.
We have another call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Hello? Is anyone there? Okay. They appear to have hung up. So, Finn, we will vacate the premises if that's what you order. Okay.
Do your thing, though.
Our thing. We've been trying to figure out what that is. Let's just get this caller out.
Yeah, we got another call.
One call, and then we'll be out of here.
Yeah.
And I'll deal with my number thing next week. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Go ahead.
My name is Dan Roy. I just wanted to say, you know, going back to all the stuff,
pharmaceutical companies, you know, these companies that create these pharmaceuticals have been fined billions of dollars, you know, and they are legally allowed to bribe our politicians, and they control our medical system. They have one goal in mind, and that's profit. And, you know, I think a lot of the alternate routes for health, the stuff that we used long before pharmaceutical companies were created, the stuff that kept us alive, those things are hidden. And I think that if you want to stay healthy, you stay away from pharmaceutical companies. If you, if you want to be a healthy person, you find alternate routes of health. Like the things you're saying.
I hear what you're saying. That's so true. And as our previous caller said, you know, support local food and overall nutrition, so that you have a baseline of that, and avoid the chemical as the chemicals and mass unhealthiness and that a lot of those corporate motives can actually do instead.
I can't think of a better note to end on. Thank you so much for that.
Can I just say one more thing?
Go right ahead, quickly. Yes.
This will be known eventually, but vaccines are poison. People need to watch out for them.
Okay. Well, on that note, we're going to draw the conversation to an end, but thank you for the call. And, boy, just fodder for more hours of discussion. That's going to do it for us tonight. Finn is up next. Roller derby, I hope. And
Roller derby, baby.
We will see you next week. Good night. OTW at 2600.com.
You know they have an Ebola vaccine now?